Last Word on Today FM.
A face that's very familiar to you all from our television screens also recently became a voice familiar to us here on Today FM when she spent a week filling in brilliantly for Dave Moore on his morning show. But she's also an actress and she will be the narrator of the Rocky Horror Show at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre from the 11th to the 16th of August. Jennifer Zamparelli, you're very welcome to The Last Word.
Thank you so much for having me. I love this building so much. I just have to keep coming back.
Oh, really? Is that a sort of promise you want to keep coming back on a regular basis?
It's lovely to kind of dip in and out, because obviously I was on 2FM for such a long time and you miss radio, but, you know, no regrets there, just FYI. But it is nice to dip your toe in and then run out.
And then tell us about dipping your toe into theatre and the Rocky Horror Show. How did this come about?
I've always had a love of theatre since I was very, very small. I suppose my first big role was when I was cast as Mary in the local nativity play in Baldoyle Church. And I thought, this is my break. This is it now. There's going to be an agent in the church somewhere and I'm off to Hollywood. And I remember going down with my little vanity case to do my own makeup. I was just mad into it. Went to New York when I was older, did a lot of theatre workshops. I actually had a theatre company in Bristol for many years, and that's how I met my husband, Lau. I cast him in a play and, you know, the rest is history, 18 years later. But then kind of work and life took over and I kind of put that part of me to the side. And that's why I suppose I was so happy when I got the opportunity to be on Republic of Telly and do Bridget and Eamon and do these comedy shows, because I could flex that muscle a little bit, you know, my acting muscle, albeit, you know, purely comedy. And then I remember doing the launch for the Bord Gáis last year, and I mentioned to Stephen Falloon, the artistic director, I said, God, I really, really love to be on the stage again and give that a go. Now I have time. I'm not on radio. I have the headspace. I can give it my all. And I think he kind of just put that in his back pocket. And when the role of the narrator came up, he thought, well, this would be perfect, because I'd already done Priscilla, Queen of the Desert with Jason Donovan years ago on the same stage. I got the opportunity to do that, which was very different because I had to go to Pineapple Dance Studio. I had to audition, I had to dance, I had to sing. And that was a crazy experience. And I thought that was kind of a once-off. So it's nice to be asked to go back and do this type of role. And I think with the Rocky Horror Show, it's one of those musicals that's kind of stood the test of time. And I think it's such a celebration of the LGBTQ plus community, of love, of inclusion, of being yourself. And it was really kind of ahead of its time back in the day. But I think it's one of those musicals that's so important now, you know, to show our, you know, show that we're allies to that community. And it's just a really feel good, provocative, cool, laugh out loud show. So to be part of it is special.
As narrator, are you on stage or are you a voice of God?
Oh, I'm on stage. I'm on stage in the full costume, and I have to do the time warp. I have to be in that number. And that kind of was this big selling point for me. So that's kind of scary. I suppose the narrator, because it's not a big character role, it would seem to be a lot easier, but you are standing on stage with the best in the business. Like, you know, theatre people and West End actors who've been on tour with the show for a long time. You're standing next to Jason Donovan, who's in a pair of suspenders and high heels. Quite daunting and frightening to think of, but amazing. So you don't want to look like an absolute tool, Matt. You know, you don't want to kind of look like you know what you're doing. And hopefully I won't stick out like a sore thumb and it'll all be good fun.
I suppose you came to a lot of people's attention originally in The Apprentice on BBC. So was that all acting as well?
I worked in sales for such a long time, and I actually ran a sales company in Bristol, and I was one of those people who used to, I was a big fan of The Apprentice. Like I was on the second season, so it was actually quite new. He was only Sir Alan when I met him.
And this, obviously not Donald Trump, this is the UK Apprentice,
the UK
with Alan
one.
Sugar.
Yeah, he's Lord Sugar now. He's only an El Sir when I met him. And I used to always shout at the television. I was like, God, why are these people so stupid? Just go across the road and buy, you know. And then I was trying to get out of my situation in Bristol. So I applied and weirdly I got through and that just all kind of took off. That was one of the, it was the biggest learning curve of my life, I would say, because I got a dose of reality, inverted commas, with regards to reality television. I mean, back then there was no safeguards for people like us. It was quite a wild experience, quite unhinged. And I was learning to set up businesses in the morning and they were making money by the afternoon and kind of instilled something in me that like, oh God, I don't want to work for anybody. I think I'm going to work for myself. Came back to Ireland, set up a photographic studio and then randomly met a man called Eddie Doyle from RTE at a lunch and they were casting for Republic of Telly and wanted somebody who would say whatever and was quite ballsy and asked me what I read for it. And then that was it, you know, but I was doing Vox Pops on my lunch break from the studio. Like I was running a business of 12 staff and I was going out to Grafton Street on my lunch break and doing these Vox Pops and always kind of had that as a backup, probably why I had an air of, I don't give a shit about this because it wasn't a do or die. It was really for fun, you know.
Do you still have business interests?
I own a salon in town on Adelaide Road. We are open 2 years now and it's been amazing to be part of. My business partner, who was my hairdresser, did my hair for years. I said to her stupidly after lockdown, I said, I think I want to invest in something. I just don't know. I want to go into business. I kind of miss that side. And literally 3 days later, she knocked on my door with a business plan and I couldn't say no to him. We got into bed with one another, so to speak. And we won Salon of the Year with Image last year and it's doing really well. And it's all down to her. Like you won't find me in there sweeping the floor, cutting people's hair. Like I'm not that involved, but it's lovely to have that as a security blanket as well.
And just before we get to all of the Culture Club questions, something else that strikes me about the fact that you didn't care in some respects and that gave you the, how would I express it? Well, it gave you the courage perhaps to ask questions of people at one stage that other people wouldn't have asked. So tell me about the time you asked Michael O'Leary what it felt like to be the biggest prick in Ireland.
Oh God, when you say it in the cold light of day, it's actually terrifying. I suppose I was just so delighted to be on the telly and doing a gig like that. And when my brief was, this was my brief, Jen, go out and cause havoc. Say things, make people uncomfortable and get a reaction. That's all you have to do. We don't care how you do it or what. I remember at one stage I was on the red carpet for some movie premiere and I had an RTE mic and I had the logo on the mic. That was quickly taken off me because people would trust the brand and would come to me, the Chris O'Dowds and the Michael Fassbenders, and they'd be hit with something that they weren't expecting. It was the shock factor and, you know, that's what I was there to do. I mean, I said things back then that I would never dream of saying now. I'm like, get me those videos and burn them, you know, get rid of them. And they follow me, Matt. They follow me everywhere on TikTok. But normally when I went out and into clubs and on the red carpet, normally you just get like people were so stunned because nobody, you know, they just weren't used to, you know, some young one from RTE asking them these kind of things. But he was always ready, you know.
Let's get to your Culture Club choices. Yes. And we always start with every guest by the first single or first piece of music that they remember buying or getting. What's yours?
Now, I'm going to tell you, let you in on a little secret. I don't think I bought this. I think most of the singles I recorded off the radio.
That's fair enough.
I remember having this pink radio and, you know, we'd be cursing people like yourself, you know, who would be talking over song and you'd be trying to get the song in its entirety. But this is Grooves in the Heart, Delight. It's from 1990. I still love this song. I still have a bop to it and I played it for my children who now love it as well, which is great.
Let's hear it.
Just lovely and delicious. I couldn't ask. what's in this torso. Heart got a deal, you won't know. Delightful, truly delightful. Life making it, doing it, especially at a show. Feeling kinda high like a Hendrix haze. Music makes motion moves like a maze. All inside of me, heart especially. Hill of a rhythm, where I wanna be. Come on, flowing, glowing with electric eyes. You dip to the dive, baby, you'll realize. Baby, you'll see the funk inside of me. Baby, you'll see that rhythm is a key. Get witty, witty, can't think quitty, quitty. Stomp on a scoop when I hear a funk group. Blue play a pop pipe, follow her to shoot. Baby, just sing about the groove.
Sing it.
The groove
is in the heart.
That's still a cracker, isn't it?
It's still a cracker. It's still a cracker. Still gets you up. It's amazing. And I played it over and over and over and over and over again as a kid. And I still play it. And it never gets old, unlike me.
Yeah, you gave us two albums. Talk to me first about The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Oh, I went to see her a couple of years ago, I never forget, in Dublin, and I was so excited to see her. And I was like, she's like, I'm not going to believe what I read. She's going to be on time. It's going to be fine. I think she was like 2 hours late or something ridiculous, but still phenomenal. It was just one of those, because I was a big fan of the Fugees as a kid. And then when she came out with this album, it was just everything that I wanted and more. And the song she sings about, she became a mother when she, you know, before making that album. And it just, it had everything I wanted from an album. It was a bit of a bop. It was very soulful. The vocals on it are outstanding. And I will forever, for all her lateness, forever be a fan of Lauryn Hill.
And then the other album you gave us was Amy Winehouse's Back to Black.
Now, Amy Winehouse has always been very special to me, because when I lived in Bristol way back when, in my early 20s, I had a friend in the sales job. I was telling you about there, Matt. And she said, I'm going to take you to Bristol University. There's this girl from London who is playing. Nobody really knows her. She just released an album called Frank. And let's go and see her. So I went to the university and there was about 100 people in the room and this beautiful looking, you know, woman on the stage, you know, a voluptuous, gorgeous size 12 in this 1940s dress, starts singing her heart out. And I was like mesmerized. Turns out it was Amy Winehouse. And I was a fan ever since. So when she came out with Back to Black, she was just so special. She wasn't for this world, for sure. And I know being a star really tormented her, and she found that quite difficult. And actually, the fella that she played with in Bristol, just her and a fella on a guitar, I had him on my radio show because he took part in The Voice UK. And I reminded him of that gig in Bristol all those years ago with Amy. And he got quite emotional because he was like, they were the good times. That was before. Like, she couldn't handle the fame. She couldn't handle any of that. But she was just such a talent. I kind of became obsessed, and I don't cry very often, but when I was driving, I'll never forget hearing the news that she died, and I was driving along the coast road from my mum's house in Balladoyle back home, and I heard that she died, and it was just, I was in floods of tears because it was just such a shame. This great talent, this beautiful woman who always wanted to be a mom and just craved a normal lifestyle, was taken too soon.
Let's hear a little bit from Back to Back. This is You Know I'm No Good.
Still and fly by the time I'm out the door.
Ah, the fantastic distinctive voice of the late Amy Winehouse from Back to Black. Given that you've had Amy Winehouse and Lauryn Hill and D-Light, I'm really surprised by your favourite band.
I think this has been hugely influenced by, I'm the youngest of six, right? And I was very heavily influenced by my older sisters and brothers. And anything my sister liked, I kind of liked as well. But she had mad taste in music. She kind of went from Whitney Houston to Metallica to Iron Maiden to Michael Jackson. You know what I mean? I think that's the way it was. You didn't have to be pigeonholed into a certain type of genre. But Guns N' Roses was just the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life. And I remember we had this big stereo in our front room and I had the record and I used to play it. And just that riff of Sweet Child of Mine in the beginning, I used to just lie on the sitting room floor and listen to it in the dark. I just thought it was out of this world, like unbelievable. And I wouldn't be a fan of Axl, I'd be more of a fan of Slash. And I remember my brother, we'd be watching Top of the Pops, he's like, "Is that the fella you like? Like, is that the fella with the hair in his face and the fag and the top hat?" I'm like, yeah, he's the one. I'm going to marry him. That's the one for me. His book is amazing. His biography is one of the greatest biographies I've ever. It's scary how rock and roll he is, but he is as rock and roll as it gets. And it became a bit obsessive. I mean, when kids were in school and they were doing the Take That kind of symbol on their, you know, books or whatever, I was drawing the Appetite for Destruction, you know, the logo with the skulls' heads and all that kind of jazz. But yeah, still to this day, and it's actually my karaoke song, Matt.
Well, don't lie down on the floor and we'll leave the lights on and we'll play a little bit of Sweet Child of Mine. Next time, so we're doing karaoke on this show, we'll get you to do
get
Sweet Child of Mine.
I'm ready.
Did Find you forget to see Guns N' Roses live?
I did. I saw them in Marley Park. It was lovely to see. I kind of felt they made peace with each other finally after all these years. It was the first time, because obviously there was rumours that they didn't really get on, and I know Axl was probably quite difficult, but there was a moment where he gave Slash the stage for a good, you know, 7 minutes and just stood to the side and we all just, you know, hailed the god that is Slash. And it was lovely to see and it was amazing. Lau actually bought tickets and he was devastated. He couldn't go, so I went with my brother. But it was lovely to finally get to see them in my mid-40s. I mean, it took a long time.
Now, the best gigs that you've nominated are two that have certainly not come up previously on the Culture Club.
Right.
How did you get to see UB40 in Wales in 2007?
Listen, don't knock them. Don't knock UB40. My mother-in-law is an avid UB40 fan. Loves the reggae, grew up in, you know, the southwest of the UK and in Bristol, you know, heavily influenced by reggae. And loves the UB40 for some reason, like obsessed. So I was taken to a UB40 in Cardiff when I first started dating my husband. Reluctantly, I'm going to admit it was reluctantly, but it was the crack. It was the most fun. And I'll tell you a little story, which will be very hard to believe for any Coldplay fan who couldn't get their hands on a ticket. Remember they played recently in, was it Croker?
It was Croker, yeah.
I got tickets. I managed to get tickets. Cost me a fortune. Whatever. Got the tickets. So excited. Never seen Coldplay before. I heard you go see this gig, there's going to be tears. It's like an experience. Okay, you did not really. Okay.
Not my thing.
I'm glad.
I went and I didn't enjoy it.
I'm glad. You should have been with me in the RDS at UB40 because I got the dates wrong. And I got tickets for the mother-in-law to come see UB40 in the RDS, which was the same night as Coldplay. So I had to sell the tickets. I think I just gave them away, the Coldplay tickets. So while everyone was bopping away, except for Matt, at the Coldplay gig, crying, time of their life, I was doing the two-step in the RDS with a load of old ravers and reggae people and just...
You probably had great fun.
We had the best night. You know, it was so much fun. And bless him, he had to keep going off the stage and having a little drink of water. He wasn't able to belt out the tunes. But there's so many hits.
Red Red Wine is the most famous one.
Wouldn't be my favourite UB40 one. Wouldn't be my favourite. There's so many. And
did they do Rats in the Kitchen?
They have. What a great song.
Yeah.
He died, so we didn't hear that.
Okay.
My kids love that song.
Yeah.
There's a rat in my kitchen. What am I going to do? Like, come on, classic. Nobody writes songs like this anymore.
We have one UB40 song, and this is Purdy in Holland live from the Homegrown in Holland album. This is I Knew You. Definitely better than Coldplay.
Much better. Do you know what I find UB40 great for? Driving. It keeps me calm. I know some of my friends love a bit of lyric or whatever, classical music, but I do find UB40 keeps me nice and calm when I'm going on a long drive. It's easy. It kind of pleases everyone. It's grand.
Your other choice is Jurassic 5 in Vicar Street.
Oh, yeah. I'm pretty sure I conceived my second child after that gig.
Too much information. Anyway, tell us about your favourite movie, please.
Okay, this was a really difficult one. I mean, there's so many. I watched a movie recently that I thought, oh, no, that's my favourite movie. Someone, what's it called again, with Diane Keating, and a coming of it, not a coming of age, she's a woman in her 60s who falls in love with Jack Nicholson. Something's Gotta Give. Classic.
Okay.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Anyway, I think I found my love for Billy Crystal from watching this movie. It's When Harry Met Sally, Meg Ryan, that famous scene where she's, you know, in the... That's not even my favourite scene. My favourite scene...
It's the most famous scene.
It's the most favourite scene.
But it's not the best scene, necessarily.
It's not the best scene. It's not the best scene. The best scene is when it's New Year's Eve and he runs to tell his friend of 15, 20 years... that she is the love of his life, and he finds her at this party, and he tells her that he loves her, but he doesn't just say I love you, he tells her of all her imperfections, and that's why he loves her. And it, every time, Matt,
it gets you.
Puddle, swear to God, it gets me. I'm in floods, desperate. But I just think it's a beautiful story over time. It's over a long period of time, and they're friends, and it's just absolutely gorgeous and very funny.
Let's hear a little bit. Actually, unfortunately, I think, does not have the male star you just referred to. This is Meg Ryan and Carrie Fisher together when mm-hmm. Harry met
That's Sally. Right.
I went through his pockets, okay?
Marie, why do you go through his pockets? You know what I found?
No, what?
They just bought a dining room table.
He and his wife just went out and spent $1,600 on a dining room table.
Where? Well, the point isn't where, Alice. The point is he's never going to leave her.
So what else is new? You've known this for 2 years.
You're right. You're right. I know you're right.
Why can't you find someone single? When I was single, I knew lots of nice single men. There must be someone. Sally found someone.
Well, Sally got the last good one.
Joe and I broke up.
What?
When?
Monday.
You waited 3 days to tell
Joe's
us?
Joe's available?
Oh, for God's sakes, Marie, don't you have any feelings about this? She's obviously upset.
I'm not that upset. We've been growing apart for quite a while.
But you guys were a couple. You had someone to go places with. You had a date on national holidays.
I said to myself, you deserve more than this. You're 31 years old.
And the clock is ticking.
No, the clock doesn't really start to tick until you're 36.
God, you're in such great shape.
Well, I've had a few days to get used to it, and I feel okay.
Good. Then you're ready.
Really, Marie?
Well, how else do you think you'd do it?
I've got the perfect guy. I don't happen to find him attractive, but you might. She doesn't have a problem with chins.
Marie, I'm not ready yet.
But you just said you were over him.
I am over him, but I'm in a mourning period. Who is it?
Alex Anderson.
You'd have only been a child when I came out of
child. Oh, absolutely. I watched it much later. It was very old when I watched it.
And watch it again and again, do you?
Yeah, yeah. Carrie Fisher would be my husband. You know, he would still, like, he was obsessed. Big Star Wars fan. Actually, at the moment, is working on the Star Wars program over in the UK because he works in stunts. So it's like all full circle for him. I never got to meet Billy Crystal. I'll always be disappointed.
So is your husband a stuntman?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He works in, he's a stunt coordinator and a stunt performer and all the rest. So he does a lot of work. He's a way cooler job than I do. And the kids keep telling me that.
Okay, must get him in at some stage to talk about that. So,
yeah,
favourite play?
Oh, this is really tricky as well. I recently went to see The Cave in the Abbey with Tommy Tiernan and written by Kevin Barry. Big fan of Kevin Barry. And I was very surprised, which I was just taken aback by how on the money it was. It was so funny and dark and beautiful and, you know, the relationships was just gorgeous. It was fantastic. My favourite play, well, one that kind of sticks out and had a profound effect on me, I would say, would be Someone Who Watch Over Me. It's a play that came from Brian Keenan's story when he was captured in, it's all very dark. This is getting very dark now.
That's okay.
Captured in the Leb and spent years as a prisoner.
Chained to a radiator.
Chained to a radiator.
Chained to John McCartney.
That's right. And the play is basically an Irishman, an Englishman and an American in a cell. But the humanity in that story really blew me away. And the fact that they could, or we found humour in their everyday, which was so grim and depressing, and how they coped in a situation like that as a piece of theatre was quite inspiring. I mean, after I saw that play, I was working in a cabling company in Baldoyle Industrial Estate, and I moved to New York after that. I was like, life is too short, I'm out of here. And I was definitely inspired by Brian Keenan's story. It was incredible. So much so, I love that play so much, I directed it myself, and that's how I met Leo. He played the American in our little theatre company in Bristol.
How long were you in Bristol for? Because it's popped up so many times during this interview. It's been highly influential on your life, clearly.
Well, if you've ever been to Bristol, it's kind of has a great music scene, and it's very cultural, and Massive Attack are from there, and it has a big reggae scene and big hip hop scene as well. Going back to Jurassic 5, that's why, like, it's good clean hip hop, that's why I love Jurassic 5. But Bristol, I kind of spent a few years there in the sales company I was working with, you know, probably about 2-3 years in my early 20s. And then I went back when I was 24-25. I actually bought my first apartment there. I lived there for about 5-6 years and came back. I met Leo and came back after I did my stint on The Apprentice and ran out of the country after meeting Sir Alan. So that's how that all happened.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's your play. Theatre show. You have gone for This Is Pop Baby and Wake.
Oh, it was just a feast for the senses. I just absolutely loved it. I was dancing, I was crying, I was laughing. It had something for everyone. And got a concept that was so simple, but so very Irish, like awake and dealing with death. And they just did it so well and so beautifully, but it was just so full of energy. One of the most energetic productions I have ever seen. I mean, you have trapeze artists and you have pole dancers and you have comedians and you have DJs and you have, you know, spoken word. And it was just everything that you kind of wanted in a production or a show. They had it. And I saw it and I absolutely loved it. And it was one of those things I just kind of recommended to everyone. I said, you need to go see these guys. They're just, the talent is endless.
Books. And you've gone for John Boyne. And
Darkness.
You've gone for his series of books, Fire, Water, Earth and Air.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about why you've made that choice.
Because I love a bit of darkness sometimes. I love to read, but I'm a slow reader. And I love this series of books because they're short and they're very dark and they're a real page turner. And I just, I was like, I love John Boyne. He's just, I think it all starts with the Hearts of Invisible Fury, my love for John Boyne and his work. And I remember speaking to someone and they said to me, you know, he writes a great comedy. I was like, tell me more. I was like, no, it's just his darkness. It's like, no, it's that's all the misery and the misfortune of the Irish people. He's great at it. I said, no, Echo Chambers or something like that. And it's really a very funny book as well. But I
that's
just...
That's his book about the impact of social media on a number of characters in England.
That's
how it
right.
ruins them, yeah.
Yeah, and I was quite surprised by that. And it's amazing. But I tend to gravitate towards his books. If I see them, I had to get them all firsthand and just really, really enjoy them. I actually handed Fire to my friend's mom who's doing a long haul to Australia. I was like, you're going to really enjoy this book. I think I traumatized her because she doesn't read that kind of stuff, you know, and now she looks at me differently every time she sees me.
Well, to give people an idea, we have The Opening of Earth by John Boyne, read by Dana White O'Hara.
I dreamed that I dreamed about the musty grey soil of the island and the sweet perfume it emits after rainfall, a double remove from a place I will never visit again. My mother explained to me once that the fragrance comes from a combination of chemicals and bacteria in the earth, which form filaments when wet, sending spores of aromatic vapor into the air. We find the scent comforting, she told me, because we want to believe there'll be a welcoming place for us one day, when we're buried deep inside it. I've been awake for almost an hour when my phone lights up with a message. I ignore it. Until another arrives a few moments later. Lifting it from its charger, I see that it's from Robbie, as I knew it would be. I read the first one. Counting on you today, bro. Don't let me down. And then the second. Delete that, yeah? I wonder how he can be so stupid as to text me at all. Messages like this have contributed to the trouble we're in. The WhatsApp group chat. Where he had to brag about that night, and the replies all made public that made us look like a bunch of animals.
Of course, this is all about abuse from a series of perspectives, mm-hmm. which is why it's so dark.
Mm-hmm. It is, and it's a difficult read, but sometimes an important read, I think. I just think he handles it so well and goes to places where you don't really want to go, but you have to be taken sometimes.
Television. What did you grow up watching?
Every American show going. And it's funny.
Did you get a chance to pick what to watch, given that you were the youngest of six?
Oh, yeah, sure. They're all well gone. I grew up in a house in Balldoyle, like a two-bedroom and a box-room house, and there was eight of us. So when they all left for, you know, wealth and fortune in America in the late 80s, I grew up with my own bedroom and a walk-in wardrobe. And they were all squashed together initially. They all left and I was on my own. But I suppose the American show, and I suppose this is why Bridget Naiman did so well in America, because we reference the American shows because they were a big influence in the 80s for us, because we only had two channels back then. But then we had all these American shows like Baywatch and Alf and Dynasty and Dallas and, you know, Two's Company or Three's Company, whatever the hell that was called, with the two young ones and your man living in the apartment. And, you know, all these Magnum PI and all these very cool shows that were just kind of like escapism for us. We're like, people live in mansions. Like, that's the first time we saw these types of houses and saw these. I mean, the sets were massive, of course, but we believed that this was the promised land. And to see it and it be in our living rooms, it was just total escapism, total joy. My dad would come in and turn that light off. I would hear, you know, especially with Dallas, whatever. But I think my very first party piece as a kid, when I was probably about 5 or 6, my sister taught me how to do Sue Ellen, you know, get me another gin and tonic before daddy comes home, I think was the line. Something
and
like that.
You've used that throughout your entire life, have you?
Well, it just came flooding back to me there, weirdly. So we kind of grew up on them and I loved them and hated them.
But the clip we actually have.
What have you got?
Is from Baywatch.
Yeah.
Yeah, David Hasselhoff in the very first episode.
Wow.
As Mitch, and with Wendy Malick and Gail Buchanan.
You know, Gail, it's not easy for Hobie. It's summer.
Just, please, don't make any excuses
I'm
for
him. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm just telling
Look, you. Mitch, this is just not working.
What's not working? Our divorce? Because our marriage suddenly doesn't work
no,
out.
No, it's just this joint custody thing with Hobie. He's bouncing back and forth between two totally different environments. Mitch, I really think that he'd be better off if he lived with me full time.
No way.
He could visit you every other week.
You can forget it.
Can you just put your own feelings aside for once and think about what's best for yourself?
I am. I always do. He just can't handle it because he wants to be with me more than he wants to be with you.
Well, of course he wants to be with you. I mean, what kid wouldn't? A block from the ocean, father who saves people's lives. Hey, you're his hero. And I'm just the ogre who makes him stay in his bedroom doing his homework over until it's neat. I mean, with you, life's a beach. Why should he ever want to leave?
You left.
Mitch, it's too late for us, but not for Hobie. What he needs now is consistency.
Now, you want consistency? I'll let him visit you every other weekend.
If Hobie lives with me, he'll have a whole world full of choices. With you, all he's ever going to want to be is a lifeguard, just like his dad.
I can't believe we're still having this damn argument. Now, lifeguards are teachers and doctors. Craig's an attorney, for God's sake.
Yeah, but he doesn't want to be like them. He wants to be like you.
I never thought Baywatch was serious drama.
Move over, Anthony Hopkins, David Hasselhoff is here. What actually? I mean, people are lifeguards. My brothers and sisters are all lifeguards. I think they're inspired from Baywatch. I really do. Well, my dad's a swimming teacher as well. But
what about you? Were you ever a lifeguard?
No, I didn't have.
Youngest child, you got away with a lot of things they didn't get away
murder.
With.
Absolute murder. But yeah, it was like, oh my God, people look like that in America? Because we don't look like that here. We definitely don't look like that on the North Rush beach, you know, in July.
We have gone way over time.
Yes.
So I'm going to finish by asking you what you watch in television now. So many people have recently said White Lotus. And every time somebody says that, I ask them, really? The third series? Did you find it as good as the first two?
No, I didn't find it. My first one is the favourite, I would have to say. I think the guy, the Australian who plays the hotel manager, outstanding.
And This Is England is your other choice.
That has stayed with me for such a long time because that, you know, you've learned a lot about me now, Matt. I like the dark stuff. This Is England is one of those, was like a snapshot of the UK in the early 90s. And it was so grim and so depressing and very relevant to watch now with regards to what's going on in the world, I would say. If you can get your hands on it, it's dark.
Jennifer Zamparelli, it has been great meeting you. Best of luck with the Rocky Horror Show, where you'll be the narrator at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre on the 11th to the 16th of August. Tickets at boardgaishenergytheatre.ie, as you said to me earlier.
The Last Word on Today FM.